Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by C Spire. Power your home or business with C Spire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/C Spire. C Spire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready. Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. Hello. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
Both of us strolling in the parking lot, bumping against the old start time, huh? It's the one thing, you know, I've told you that's certainly unique about this line of work is it don't wait for you. You got to be in the chair, ready to go. But we're here. We're off to the races. My gosh. What
had time to make some tea.
I see that. Yes, you did. What a dump of news. Man, oh, man. It's a pretty good day for the president. First, the news broke last evening that we have at least a temporary trade deal with China, as the president likes to say. And that's good news, and the markets certainly responded well. The futures were up about 1,100 points since the markets opened. Pulled back a little bit, but my gosh, still bumping the 1,000-point increase mark on the Dow, up 965 at present. All the indexes are up. The NASDAQ up 615. And that also means, of course, that the 10-year yield is up. That's because investors now feel like the economy is going to sort of reignite and take off. And in doing so, that could pump inflation. In fact, oil is up almost $3 today, going in the other direction, because investors think, wait, we got a trade deal with China. We may see a significant increase in economic output and demand just getting this thing resolved. Just this uncertainty. Boom, price of oil up. But overall, good news with this deal apparently with China. Now, just looking at it at the highest level, haven't really dug into all the details. And in fact, there's little information publicly available other than a pause. But it kind of looks to me like we're sort of back where we started before Liberation Day. Just kind of tracking the chronology between the U.S. and China, tariffs imposed by this country on Chinese imports and vice versa, Chinese tariffs on American imports. Sort of feels like we're back to where we started. But I think the best thing here is that they're signing off on this deal. I mean, they seem to be serious now. You know, it remains to be seen whether or not the old communist regime complies with the agreement. They didn't the first go round, and the president has made that clear. But overall, good news. The Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says, we got more in the works. They're on the way in 90 days then to cut a permanent deal. This is a pause, but the market overall feels really good about it. We all should. So this is the day you want to check your investments and your 401k plans. the thing I've learned about markets, and I'm far from an expert. I don't pretend to be one whatsoever. They tend to settle up. They don't like staying down. And that's just because there's always enormous optimism about American ingenuity and the American economy. And there should be, because historically, it's gone up. It cycles, of course, but it's still the greatest wealth-generating device on the planet, is the American equity markets. There's no doubt about that. But that's where we are. Now, the other big news that hit us this morning, the president says he's signing an executive order. I just tuned in to his news conference there at the White House. It was fascinating. He says this will slash drug prices by up to 80%. Now, we should point out that this applies to the federal government's acquisition of pharmaceuticals. The president really doesn't have the power to intervene in the pricing that commercial insurers pay and those that are not covered by Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, one of the government health insurance programs. But what he said was that his plan, that the executive order, is to essentially dictate that those programs, Medicaid, Medicare, TRICARE, pay no more than the lowest price paid for the same pharmaceutical in other countries. And there's no doubt, there's a huge, you know this, there's a huge disparity that pharmaceutical companies charge way less for their products than they do here in this country. I submit, Rhino, that you talk about this all the time. It's because of the government's involvement. It's this government going more socialized medicine through the years, and the pharmaceutical companies, does not every company virtually that vends to the federal government abuse that? Oh, it's the government. We always look at government money as that, oh, that's free money. That's really nothing. Don't worry about it. It's not coming out of your pocket. It's not a private company that's worried about the bottom line. It's taxpayer. Actually, it's more accurate to say it's borrowed money. You know, they got a printing press that just cranks out.
So, the most serious calculation done for a proposal is how much fluff you can add and still win the bid.
That's right. Now, before we celebrate and take victory laps, he says immediate, I'm cautioning. And again, I'm all for achieving some sort of equity, if you will, and eliminating this disparity. I don't like government intervention, I'll be honest with you. But this is the problem in that we've created these massive government programs. So we got 330 million people in this country. And between Medicaid, Medicare, and TRICARE, almost half of the population gets their insurance from the government. Thus, I've said it before, I'll say it again. The government is largely in the health insurance business. All you got to do is look at the numbers. Look at the dollars spent. And then think about the fact that nearly half of the population gets their insurance from the government. This could be easily gained. This is what we got to be concerned about. What drug companies are likely to do, and I honestly believe this is the president's intent. I know he presents it as, hey, look, we're going to lower drug prices here in this country. I think this is the president's intent. The drug companies are now going to increase their prices substantially overseas, and that will be the benchmark they'll use. Now, 70% of global pharmaceutical profits, you know where they come from? This country. It wouldn't shock me, Rhino, if they say, oh, we're not selling to the EU anymore. We're not selling in Australia. We're not selling in these other foreign countries. We don't need it. We're just going to focus on the U.S. Therefore, there is no benchmark favored nation pricing. I know that sounds far-fetched, but you're going to see some realignment and adjustments. There's no doubt about that.
The only thing I would worry about with something like the EU is I'm fairly certain they have laws that would allow them to force a negotiation for a licensing to manufacture a generic version of whatever drug would be pulled from their markets.
You're totally right. And that's, to me, that's the number three risk. So the first risk I just said is, well, they're just going to raise it overseas. Second risk is they just won't sell as much, and that'll readjust the benchmark pricing. The third is exactly what you say. To some extent, we're kind of ceding the pricing of pharmaceuticals to the foreign countries. Exactly what you said. So you're ahead of me there. So I really think that's the intent. I do. To force the other countries to pay more and maybe to blow up their terrible socialized medicine model. I think that's what's going on here. Heather Wellmuth, coordinator, Huntington's Disease Team Hope Walk, is coming on next.
Hey, this is Bob. I'm here with Logan. ESI Supplies, the drill mud headquarters. What do y'all got going on with that?
Man, we stock a couple different products of drilling mud, and Bayroid's a big vendor for us. And we do mainly for vertical and horizontal drillers. So if you're a underground utility contractor that is looking for drill mud, this is the place to go.
Stop by and see them at 111 Aerosmith Drive in Richland, or give them a call at 601-933-4910. That's 601-933-4910, or online at esisupply.net.
Hello, I'm Gary Jolly from the Tractor Store. LS Tractor understands your passion for the land, and just like you, LS Tractor is committed to excellence and superior products. LS Tractor comes with a long list of standard features that are unmatched by other brands and backed with the LS commitment to provide exceptional customer service and satisfaction. You get a lot more for your money with the LS Tractor. Come to the Tractor Store in Richland to experience the LS difference. The Tractor Store in Richland.
Here's John and Corey Ravenstein.
Every 6 weeks, our diamond cutter flies from Tel Aviv, Israel, to bring fresh production to Juniker Jewelry Company. And I personally hand-select every diamond for maximum brilliance, beauty, and value.
We buy thousands of diamonds a year, entire parcels of 1 carats, 2 carats, 3 carats, and more, every shape and size, and every price range.
And we conclude our business with that million-dollar handshake and the traditional mazal.
It's a Yiddish term. Mazal means much more than the deal is done.
It means good luck and blessings upon you, your family, and business.
And that's how we feel about your diamond when you buy from us.
You can't buy a better quality diamond at a lower price anywhere in Mississippi. That's the Juniker Diamond Guarantee.
And why folks come from all over the state to Juniker Jewelry Company.
Mississippi's direct diamond importer. I want to shake your hand.
Juniker Jewelry Company. From anywhere in Mississippi, we're at 1485 Highland Colony Parkway, just south of 463 in Madison, and online at junikerjewelry.com, Mississippi's direct diamond importer.
Hey, I'm here with Alex Murray of Auto Innovation.
At Auto Innovation, we want to change your car buying experience. When you're in the market for a quality pre-owned vehicle, please come see us. We want to make friends, not just customers. All eligible vehicles are inspected by a MasterTech mechanic and come with a limited powertrain warranty on us. We are located on Highway 51 in Ridgeland. Come by and see us or check out our inventory online at autoinnovation.net. Let us change your car buying experience.
Auto Innovation, Highway 51 in Ridgeland.
Pure Air Consultants has always been your go-to for reliable and affordable heating and cooling systems, and now we're offering an additional product to avoid the 25 to 30% increase that everyone is talking about. With Day and Night, a Carrier family product, your professionals at Pure Air Consultants can install a reliable heating and cooling system with a 10-year system warranty. Pure Air Consultants and Day and Night, providing ultimate comfort for your home for an affordable price. Call us today for your free quote, 601-939-7420. That's 601-939-7420, or find us online at mypureairconsultants.com.
This is where the story of your state gets told each day. We're proud to cover the Magnolia State like nobody else. Super Talk Mississippi.
This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
When I wake up, well, I know I I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I have
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. It's our pleasure to welcome now Heather Wilmoth, coordinator, Huntington's Disease Team Hope Walk. You're doing that this year, right?
Yes, we're on our fourth one.
2025. All right. Heather, yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for allowing me to come in and talk Huntington's. Huntington's disease is a terminal neurodegenerative brain disease. It's like having ALS, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's all at the same time. And there's no treatment. There's no cure. They can treat some of the symptoms, but they cannot treat the disease. And in Mississippi, the number is that we have over 200 families dealing with this disease. But it's not an accurate number because, as an example, my family, we're a family of four. My husband, Nathan, suffers from the disease. He's in the late mid-stage. And we found out last year that my bonus child from his first marriage now has the disease. Hmm. Our son together is considered at risk. He will not be tested until he's 18 and makes that decision, or if he is showing signs and symptoms of the juvenile version of Huntington's disease. Late-stage Huntington's, they're trapped in their bodies. They cannot walk. They cannot talk. They cannot eat. None of that. They rely on the care of others for their daily care. But it's like imagining having ALS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's all at the same time, because he does suffer from various aspects of those three diseases. And this Saturday, we're having our fourth annual Mississippi Team Hope Walk at the Flowood Nature Park. Registration begins at 8, walk begins at 9, and the monies from these fundraisers go to benefit our centers of excellence, which we have one right here in Mississippi in Flowood. Dr. Jubin Wong runs that, and HDSA, Huntington's Disease Society of America, does not give that designation out lightly. Hmm. You have to work really hard to have that designation, and they specialize in Huntington's. We did have an experience after. We've got two neurologists that we see that specialize in Huntington's, one here, which is Jubin Wong, and then we also go to UAB in Alabama for clinical trial research stuff if we're able to be involved with it. We had an experience where we had another neurologist that had never heard of Huntington's and came in to talk with us because Nathan was in the hospital for a separate issue. And he was like, as we were talking, he goes, well, that's not what I read. And I said, well, you're reading. We're living it. So just because you get paired up with a neurologist doesn't mean that they know Huntington's. Centers of excellence know Huntington's, and that's what these walks benefit. The money raised also goes into having education days. Mississippi just had its first education day back in November. I'm also the state team captain for the advocacy leaders for HDSA. Right now I'm a team of one, so if anyone out there would like to help me get word and talk to our federal and state representatives about Huntington's, I would love the help. Please don't hesitate to contact me. You can contact SuperTalk because I'm a member of the SuperTalk family in the Brookhaven office. And so, you know, we could use all the help we could get. As far as the walk, we hope you'll come and join us. If you'd like to donate, you can go to hdsa.org/THWMS, Team Hope Walk Mississippi. You can join a team. You can create your own team, or you can just I'm sorry, I got a little choked up there. You can just donate. We are always looking for raffle items for the day of the walk. So, you know, just all the things. And I'm sorry, I just kind of run.
Okay, so what are the funds used for exactly? You touched on that a minute.
They go to run the Centers of Excellence.
Okay.
To fund these Centers of Excellence that give care for people with Huntington's. They know Huntington's. So it's not like you're going to someone who's never heard of the disease before.
Yeah.
These people specialize in that. They fund education days, especially for newly diagnosed people with Huntington's. When we were diagnosed in 2016, we were alone. We felt like there was no one, and we didn't have a center of excellence back then.
So when does typically this disease set in? You talked about a juvenile sort of form of it.
There is a juvenile form, but typically in the prime working years, ages 30, between 30 to 50 is usually when a person will get diagnosed. It's an inherited disease. So Nathan inherited it from his mom. Each child of a patient with Huntington's has a 50-50 chance of inheriting the disease. So as an example, my husband inherited from his mom. However, his sister tested and she did not inherit. So her children will never worry about Huntington's. However, Nathan and I, our children will, as a matter of, and as I said earlier, my bonus daughter tested positive with the gene for it last year. And our son is considered at risk. He's only 10, so they will not test because they want kids to have as normal of a childhood as they can.
Yeah.
So unless they're showing those signs and symptoms that need to be treated, physical signs and symptoms, then they won't test until they're at least 18.
I see. When was this disease discovered? I assume it's named after someone named Huntington.
It is. George Huntington, Dr. George Huntington, I believe it was George, back in the early 1800s, discovered the disease. Now, there was not a way to test for the disease until 1993.
Okay. And what are the symptoms?
Well, for example, with my husband, he was dropping tools. He was a diesel mechanic. He was dropping expensive parts and expensive tools, and he actually lost his job because of it. There's stiffness in the muscles and in the body. There is the inability to walk. My husband has, we call it the Huntington's gait, because of the way there's a stiffness. And there's also a concern for newly diagnosed, newly symptomatic people being misconstrued as being intoxicated, because that has happened quite often, where someone will see a person with Huntington's, call the police saying that they're intoxicated, and they're really not intoxicated. It's the effects of the disease.
Interesting. Is there any sort of R&D occurring to try to find some sort of treatment or cure?
There, when Nathan got diagnosed in 2016, there were only two drug companies working on Huntington's. Okay. Now there are over 50.
Okay.
They're trying towards the earlier stages. Our fight, matter of fact, we spoke with the FDA back in November about allowing for all stages of Huntington's to be able to be involved in clinical trials. Because, you know, if Nathan never got any worse than what he is right now, we'd be happy with that, just because he'd still have that quantity of life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I liken it to when your children are young and you're the only one that can understand what they're saying. And sometimes Nathan's speech can be that way. And, you know, but he still has quality of life. He still has two children that love him. He has a wife that loves him. He has family and friends. So it's not like, you know, we don't want people feeling like people like Nathan with Huntington's in the stage are just easily thrown away.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Sure. You said it's terminal.
It's terminal. There is.
Yeah, well, what's the what's kind of the life expectancy once
20 years from the onset of symptoms.
I got you. 20 years.
20 years.
Okay, and it just progresses
that,
from...
It progresses. In the 8 years that Nathan, since Nathan got diagnosed, he's been wheelchair-bound for about the past 3-4 years. His speech has gradually gotten worse. His speech... It's hard to understand, but it's gradually gotten worse in the past 3 years. He can still feed himself on certain things. I just don't, because I worry about the choking. The two things that can kill a Huntington's patient are respiratory issues and choking to death. So, yeah.
So do they need assistance
yes.
to eat and so forth?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was pretty proactive when Nathan first got diagnosed and have continued to be proactive. And part of a program that Nathan is a part of has helped us. And part of where they have helped us is they pay for a sitter to stay with Nathan so I can go to work.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'd either have to work from home, have to stop working, or bring Nathan to work with me every day.
Yeah, gotcha. Heather Wilmoth, coordinator, Huntington's Disease Team Hope Walk 2025. And what's your other responsibility there as well with the organization?
Oh, I am the state captain.
Okay, gotcha. So it's coming up this Saturday.
This Saturday.
And where can folks get more info?
HDSA.org/THWMS, Team Hope Walk, Mississippi.
Gotcha. Appreciate you coming in and telling us about it.
Thank you for letting me come in.
Thank you. Yep. Folks, we're stepping aside for a break. Coming right back in the Element Well studio. Stay with us.
Like black holes in the sky.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
It's Middays. I'll have to admit, I wasn't that familiar with the disease, and I appreciate Heather coming in and explaining all that to us. You know, that's a tremendous burden on a family when you've got an adult, essentially, that requires the sort of care that a child would. And so I feel for him.
Yeah, the tragedy's not the right term, but it feels like the only one I can come up with at the moment, but it's in the timing.
Yeah.
Because if you start developing symptoms of Parkinson's, that's usually much earlier on. You shape your life around living with it. Alzheimer's or dementia tends to come later in life.
Yeah.
So it's something that the person doesn't necessarily have to deal with the fallout as much as the children do. I mean, there are still personal fights every day because your brain is just not working at the same level that you know deep down it should. And then the ALS is one that, again, kind of like Parkinson's, it generally shows itself a little earlier on. Whereas with this, because it's a later onset the majority of the time, you've already started building your life in a different direction, and it causes a complete U-turn, or it makes you take a fork in the road you weren't really ever planning on ever taking.
Yeah. All of those neurological disorders, I know they've been confounding medical science. It seemed to be the most complex to grapple with, to solve, to cure, to treat.
It's because the human body is both much simpler than we ever thought it was and still more complex than we can conceive of.
That makes sense.
I mean, you remember when the Human Genome Project was the big thing, and oh my goodness, it's going to take decades to do this, and they had, 80% of it in a couple years?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they finally got it fully mapped after a decade and a half or so, but it was like the last 3% they were mapping.
That's right.
But they were expecting that to take until the next century.
Yeah. Quantum computing, as you know, would be an extremely powerful tool in that effort, as well as other resolutions and solutions to medical problems. Just because it's not that humans with existing sort of supercomputers can't perform the same exercises and use those tools for the same research. It's the amount of time it takes to do that. And what quantum and AI combined do is just shrink that time frame. dramatically. I mean, it's like having thousands of research scientists at your fingertips, essentially. This is why this is so exciting and I think will be so transformational to our world. In fact, at 11:05, we've got an interesting guest, Representative Jeff Bradley from the South Carolina House. And Representative Bradley is going to talk about how AI can be used to help reduce redundancies in state regulations. Of course, you can also see, and it has been employed by the DOGE team, in just identifying crazy spending as an example. Because it's gotten so massive, and unfortunately, all these systems are disconnected. They're old systems before we had this thing called the internet, and there's been little effort to integrate them and to ensure that information is shared by these systems.
It's not like the internet's a new thing.
Well, I agree, but when we're talking about government time, you know, a decade in government's like 10 minutes in the private sector.
Unless it's spending, then it's the other way around.
Well, that's true. They're pretty rapid at that. That's because they got this machine that prints money for them. I say it again, that's what really has caused all these problems, is that there's no practical limit to the amount they can spend. And I just, you never hear them say, oh, we just can't afford that. No, they never say that, because they know, oh, we just got to print more money, just go into more debt, no problem. That's a unfortunate analysis of where we stand with respect to spending. So the big news this morning, we got a tariff deal, at least for 90 days, with China. And the president is signing an executive order that would impose a most favored status price model for pharmaceuticals. He also talked this morning about eliminating the middlemen. That, of course, would be the pharmacy benefit managers, and that's been a controversial subject here in Mississippi. So I don't know if that means that the government's just going to pass some sort of law or some sort of executive order that would essentially prohibit and gut the industry. It wasn't clear. He just said the middlemen. He also...
Well, I mean, he could just walk into the room with the PBM sitting at the table and put the gun with the single bullet on the table. But the gun has a label on it called transparency.
And that's the big prop. And again, this, again, is rooted in the government's involvement in healthcare. There's no doubt. It's a slush fund.
Because if PBMs couldn't obscure the real cost from both sides, they wouldn't really be all that viable as far as big business moneymakers.
Oh, I think that's right. And you and I have talked about how complicated it is. You know, we've had Robert Dozier on the program. He's a pharmacy, Independent Pharmacy Association executive director. I'm not sure exact title, but he runs that organization. And I encourage folks out there, go Google or use whatever your favorite search tool is to look up pharmacy benefit managers. But go to the images tab, look at the graphic depictions of all the relationships and the involvement of PBMs and the just flow of drugs, essentially from the maker of those drugs to the patient who consumes them. My gosh, it's complicated. Intentionally complicated. That's
but with that many hands taking their little chunk.
Yes.
Is it any wonder the price at the consumer level is so high?
No. And I would say, again, it's because of government. Government gave rise to that Byzantine system, like it does so many other crazy systems that I think are not in the best interest of consumers. So this is an interesting day. So another big piece of news is that Hamas is set to free U.S. Israeli hostage Edan Alexander today in a goodwill gesture to Trump. That's interesting. So this is another win, I think, for the Trump administration going on, if I'm not mistaken. Is this the last one? The last American
The last known, yeah.
Okay.
There's still the chance that there is one that is not known, but that's only like weird scuttlebutt online and in social media.
Okay. The other news that broke over the weekend, you saw Pakistan and India, who've been at it forever, they at least agreed to a ceasefire at this point. And then this coming Thursday, Ukraine and Russia are going to meet to talk about potentially bringing an end to that deal. The president talked about that in his briefing this morning. He said he and his team are involved in that. I believe they probably did do a little poking and prodding. It's crazy when you think about it. It's just nothing but waste and bloodshed and just horrific circumstances that are unnecessary and producing nothing. No, the problem I have with it, I shouldn't say the problem, the concern is that these people cannot be trusted. What, either side of any of them. Oh, yeah, we got that. And then they go do their own deal. That's the concern. So hopefully there will be a little accountability here and we'll be able to make this stuff stick. Also, I don't think I'd be flying into Newark Airport anytime soon. Yet another glitch yesterday, a ground stop. So if you know anything about the way air traffic control works, you got at a larger airport, such as Newark, you get Class B, for example, airspace is what it's called. You have ground controllers, and you got different categories of controllers that deal with you depending on where you are in the process of taking off and landing, approach and departure, if you will. So there's ground control. That's all they do is control the ground traffic, where other controllers are dealing with incoming and then departing. But anyhow, there's a glitch on the ground, had to slow the thing down. Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy says, yeah, it's a big old problem we got to fix. We're stepping aside for a break on middays. Coming right back.
The one by.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Oh, would you like to swing on a star? Airy moonbeams home in a jar. And be better off than you are.
Or would you rather be a fish?
A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book. To fool the people is his only thought. And though he's slippery, he still gets...
Wow, you're digging kind of deep there, aren't you?
Sometimes you got to play them or they go away. You never know when you're going to need Bing Crosby swinging on a star.
Oh, man. I got you.
You could be better than you are.
Yeah.
You could be swinging on a star.
Well, that's... Just hadn't heard that in a while, I think. So,
my dad used to sing that all the time doing yard work.
Swinging on a star, huh? The old crooner himself, Bing Crosby. So, we are back with you in the Element Well studio, just talking about the flurry of announcements here the last couple of days. Really, the last 24 hours, we got the last American hostage in Hamas freed. Got that going on. We got a deal, at least a ceasefire between Pakistan and India before they blow up the dang world. And then we got Russia and Ukraine about tired of that nonsense. They're going to be meeting Thursday.
In fairness, India and Pakistan would likely just mess up that hemisphere.
Well, that's true.
That is one thing about nuclear weapons that the pop culture lexicon has gotten wrong. And it was founded in science of the day, but it never got corrected. Like the whole concept of nuclear winter seems like that was a bit overblown. Like, yeah, a nuclear exchange between the U.S. and Russia would not be a good thing. But a localized nuclear exchange wouldn't be the end of the world. It'd be the big changes in the world.
But it'd have an impact.
It wouldn't be the nuclear winter that everybody worried about. If one nation launches nukes against another, we're all going to be living in a nuclear winter. And it's like, not unless the biggest dogs.
All right, so do you remember this like class of nuclear weapons introduced? It's been a while, two or three decades ago, that could like eliminate all the people but leave the structures intact. Do you remember something like that?
That was a theory, yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what that reminds me of. I don't remember, again, what those – there was some technical name.
Well, there were
name
a lot of theorized weapons over the years of nuclear weapon proliferation and development. I mean,
yeah.
You go back to the 50s and there were, depending on who you ask, serious or not so serious conversations about, quote unquote, doomsday devices.
Yeah.
That were literally just a bunch of hydrogen bombs around a bigger bomb to set off the bigger bomb.
Yep.
To crack a hole in the Earth's crust and just say, deuces.
Gotcha. It's just hard to really anticipate all that stuff. Lots of work going on to try to design new weaponry. But the old style nuclear weapons, that would certainly have an effect. You're right, on the region, but you can't, I think, overlook the fact that just,
well, a lot of people worry about like nuclear fallout. In the U.S., there used to be fallout shelters dotted across the country, except
I remember
in an airburst, there's not a whole heck of a lot of fallout.
Yeah.
Fallout comes from when you detonate it on the surface and it knocks all that radiated material into the atmosphere and it falls out.
Yeah.
With an airburst, like the majority of nuclear devices were designed to do, not a whole lot of fallout. That's why people live in Hiroshima and Nagasaki to this day.
Well,
because those were airburst bombs.
I remember in a kid in school, you know, we had to deal with that. Practice for a nuclear attack because it was just considered a constant threat back in the 60s. On the ceasefire text line, yeah, neutron bomb, Jeff from Loosedale. That's right. Thank you, Jeff. That's what it was called, the neutron bomb. And I remember reading analyses of it. It was supposed to, you were supposed to be able to drop it, detonate it essentially, and it would take out the population within a certain radius, but all the structures would remain intact. Wow.
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, we had some in the stockpile, but I think it was H.W. Bush that dismantled the last of. Oh, they had a goofy government name for it because it wasn't nearly as cool as neutron bomb. It was like excessive radiation weapon or enhanced radiation weapon or something. It had ERW. I just remember it was ERW.
On the ceasefire text line, I buy my diabetes medicine from Canada. It's $150 for a 90-day supply. It's $500 for 30 days here, and it's the same medicine. Yeah, so I hear you, and I know that's a big problem. The question is, what do you want to do about it? And here's the slippery slope concern that I have. You guys may not have that. Is if a president can just come in and say, hey, look, whatever business you're in, you can't charge that anymore. That's the risk, and that's the concern I have. It was, remember, Kamala Harris had said her plan to combat inflation was to prohibit so-called price gouging. The president said that this morning, price gouging. So I get concerns about that. Now, as far as negotiating what Medicare and Medicaid pay, which is something Biden tried to do and couldn't get it done, sure, they're the customer, and that's reasonable to impose those provisions in the pricing model. Government's a customer. But throughout the rest of the economy, it doesn't make sense. We're coming right back with Jeff Bradley.
Hour of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
And now, the talk that keeps Mississippi talking.
That's what I like to listen to.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert. Here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Here again, oh Lord.
Welcome back, everyone. It is hour two of Middays. We're coming at you live from the Element Well studio. It's Monday, so that means we have a short show for you today. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors, will be on at 12:05. But right now, it's Representative Jeff Bradley from South Carolina. He represents District 123, which includes Beaufort and Jasper counties. Representative Bradley, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. So we got your article that you wrote in an op-ed in the Post and Couriers where we saw it. You're talking about the use of artificial intelligence there in South Carolina to eliminate lots of these duplicative laws, particularly those that deal with regulations. I don't know what it's like in South Carolina there, Representative Bradley, but here in Mississippi, it's 3,000 bills a year that get introduced in our 90-day session. Of course, that gets trimmed down rather dramatically, but it's impossible for you guys to review all of these pages and gazillions of pages of legislative gobbledygook, honestly, and really understand that, hey, we already did that. We don't need to do that again. And you can't have enough lawyers to review all that. So tell us what you guys are doing.
Well, you know, it's an interesting point that you bring up, because what happens is, in order to get the legislation passed, you have to take the shortest track to get there. And so they exclude the difficult part of legislating what language needs to be there. They turn it over to the state agency, and then the state agency creates or promulgates a regulation. So when you get right down to it, it is we in the General Assembly that create the problem of the regulations by the very nature of us not taking the time to do it well on the front end. People are just interested in getting a bill passed. And they worry about it later. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to identify those duplicative regulations and do what we can to get rid of them. And what we've done, Gerard, is we have partnered with Google what they did is they took, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk a bunch of gobbledygook words to your audience, but they took our code of regulations and used that as a large language model.
Yeah.
And then they dropped that into an AI, and the idea is we can work with that to define where there are duplicative regulations, and then we try and work to cut them out.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense because as we said, and you make a point in your article about, man, we need to employ this at the federal level as well. I think about the mountains of pages of code across the federal government. Heck, just the IRS code unto itself is massive. You get into these big agencies, CMS, Medicare, Medicaid, DHS, all the above, another just monumental amount of code, pages of code. You know there's all kinds of overlap, and more than likely, Representative Bradley, I think you would agree, conflict within the code.
Yep. Well, and our code has 10 million words in it. You said in your intro, you alluded to the number of lawyers that it would require to go through that, and that's why we're looking at the AI to help that. South Carolina is the worst offender in the nation, is probably no surprise to you, is California. They have 412,000 do's and don'ts in their regulatory code. And the star of the country is Idaho, that has 15,000 do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
And South Carolina is number 16 with 81,000 do's and don'ts. And that's where we're focused to try and reduce that by a quarter. That's our objective.
Okay.
So that's what the speaker told me he wanted me to do.
Yeah. So you said you've partnered with Google, and you've essentially you're feeding your mountain of regs to the system to create an LLM, and then you'll use the various AI tools to search that LLM. And hopefully, Representative Bradley, that this would be used when drafting new legislation, right?
yeah, one would think, but don't count on it. So we're guilty of the same thing. We didn't do 3,000 in 90 days, but we're good for 1,200 to 1,700 in any given session.
Yeah. Well, so, we get that. We get 3,000 introduced, and, you know, half of them may be renaming some bridge or something somewhere. And I'm not trying to downplay that. I'm just saying that all that gets mixed in. You get something like that, as you know, mixed in with something here in the state of Mississippi. We just passed major tax reform, which is extremely complex. But nonetheless, there's just a limited amount of time these guys have that working for us in our legislature to review all this stuff. You're likely to introduce something that possibly conflicts or overlaps.
Yeah, well, that's what we're trying to do. But we've got a lot of other stuff going on in South Carolina you might be interested in.
Sure.
I know you guys, y'all in Mississippi are way up the curve with your addressing AI in the state of Mississippi. I know you've got a great guy with Colin Napier working on that that main program, Mississippi AI Network, where he has, for a very small amount of money, put together a network to drive education into the constituent population of Mississippi. We're in the absence of even knowing Colin, I work on something called the Southern Regional Education Board AI and Education Commission, and Colin has been on there to speak to us a couple of times about what he's done, and it's pretty impressive. And I think that we're trying to do the same thing, Gerard. We're trying to educate the citizens of South Carolina on how to use AI. We don't believe that AI is going to replace jobs, but we do believe that AI, people that are unable to use AI, may be replaced by people who do.
Yeah.
So that's one of the efforts that we're working on. But we're working in three areas, basically. We're working on, let me back up for just a second.
Sure.
If I could.
Sure.
Our guiding framework in South Carolina is something we call the three Ps: to protect, promote, and pursue. And to protect is where we want to protect citizens from AI misuse. That's like deepfakes, scams, that sort of stuff. We want to promote AI's adoption across government, schools, and business, and we're working to try and make that happen. And then finally, we're pursuing growth by attracting innovation and investment in South Carolina. And I think that parallels the track that you guys are on. I don't see what you're doing as being a whole lot different than what we're doing in South Carolina. Maybe some individual efforts are a little bit different. But we're working with the colleges. We're working with the 9 through 12th grade. We're working with the elementary kids and the middle school kids that we're doing some pretty innovative stuff with. And on top of that, we are working to we see a situation, and I don't know whether it's the same thing in Mississippi, but in South Carolina, I'm trying to protect the state from spending bits of money on AI in a siloed fashion. So you have this agency wants to spend $2 million. This agency wants to spend $1.9 million. This agency wants to spend $5 million. This agency wants to spend $8 million. And we're trying to coordinate all of that. And we're working on a combination investment across the state that all these different agencies will have access to, and we're pretty excited about that. We've stand by for that. That announcement will be coming in the not too distant future. And then on top of that, we've got business initiatives that we're attempting to build out a marketplace where the issue, Gerard, with AI is the use cases, where people need to know how to use it. So we're building a network of folks that are actively engaged in the use of AI and are willing to share how they're using it so that people can check in with that network and find ways that they can use and apply AI to their businesses. So we're working across education, government, and business to try and pick up the adoption of the use of AI. We talk a lot in South Carolina about applied AI. There are folks that are working on frontier AI, but we're focused on AI and becoming AI ready in the state.
Yeah, makes total sense. Representative Bradley, if you can hang on, we can keep talking about this. So we've got a break upon us right now. We got another segment that we can continue this discussion. Can you hang with us?
Happy. Yes, sir.
All right. We got Representative Jeff Bradley from South Carolina. We're coming right back from the Element Wealth Studio. Tainted love.
Days with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
Right. On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone. It's middays. We're talking to Representative Jeff Bradley from the South Carolina House of Representatives discussing use of AI in government, trying to eliminate a lot of this duplicative regulation mess that we have in our states and our federal government as well. And, yeah, it would be a powerful tool, certainly, for that purpose. What do your colleagues think about this, Representative Bradley?
Well, some of them get it and some of them don't. And I can't imagine it's any different than it is across the country. Some people are engaged with it and some people are, they're fearful of it. Some totally get it and understand that we need to address it. Like our Speaker of the House got it and appointed the first standing committee in the country that dealt with AI. And so, we're trying to make it happen.
Yeah. We have technology committees in our respective houses here in Mississippi. And, of course, as you can imagine, AI has been a central subject in their work and their efforts. And recently, this past session, they just formed an AI regulatory task force that consists of members of the legislature, including Colin Napier, who you also referenced earlier with the Mississippi Artificial Intelligence Network.
Aren't you on that task force as well?
I am. I was asked to be the sort of the business representative on that task force. I come from the IT industry and watched all this stuff evolve over the decades. Unfortunately, it got more mainstream, more practical, and more adopted after I sold my company. But, you know, you could see this is where it was going. And I submit that what we did in our industry was build all this underlying infrastructure that makes this possible. It's all the networking. Right. It's all the compute. It's all the storage. It's all the massive improvements in processing power that enable this technology. It's not anything new, as you know. This has been discussed and worked on for decades. We just didn't have the systems, the underlying compute and storage and network infrastructure that was powerful enough to support what you need to do anything that's useful with respect to AI. Because if it takes days for it to return an answer, you're not likely to use it. But we have the technology now where it's, you know, split seconds you get answers to complex questions. It would take a human hours, days, months, perhaps, to research. So, and again, our goal there is to try to establish some sort of reasonable framework that doesn't impede innovation. And I'm sure you guys are talking the same thing in South Carolina.
We are, Gerard. And what going around the country and going to these events on AI, what I've found, and this was probably no surprise to you, the red states are all about the innovation and not the restrictions and not the regulations. And the blue states are very much, their first thought is, how can I control this? And
so true.
That quickly concerns the major players in this field, because then they're going to have to stop what they're doing and parse out 50 different boxes of regulations on how they they can innovate within their space. And we're trying to stop that. or we're being deliberate about that. We're not trying to stop it, let's say, but we're very deliberate about that. I don't think that we as legislators know enough to be telling a developer what he should be doing. I think that culture will dictate to us some of the areas where we need to put effort as we go forward. And well, I like to tell people that there was a case in Massachusetts where a family had a child that used AI for a homework assignment, was failed as a result of it. The family sued the school district because there was no explicit instruction that one could not use AI. And so AI was used. And so that's a cultural thing that we might want to keep an eye on and see how that pans out and watch for those sort of things. Early on in our process with the AI stuff, we called the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of South Carolina and asked him to come in and sit down and talk with us. And we did. And he said, you know what? I think that what would make sense would be for y'all, for laws, Jeff, the first thing you ought to consider doing is the real clearly criminal stuff and stay away from the other stuff, the liability stuff, because we have a lot of smart lawyers in South Carolina that can work out those liability issues. Let's focus on taking the bad guys out of the equation, and that's what we're doing. We're looking at things like deep fake porn, child morphing of images, and scams like that.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense, Jeff, honestly. And you're probably familiar with Tennessee, maybe one of the first states to pass any form of AI regulation. And, of course, Tennessee being home to lots of performing artists, you know, that's one of the first things they said is that it's essentially illegal to duplicate or mimic someone's voice. And right. Use that, you know, for an asset that you could sell, where you're essentially copying, you know, a human voice that is popular and is an asset. That made total sense to me. That was one of the first things, and that's what I would consider to be nefarious, wrong use of the technology. It really doesn't produce any value. It's just somebody using it as a scam to get rich, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's kind of where we're focused. And then, again, the other side of it is to allow it to run and bring to us the benefits from the innovation that it represents.
Yeah, makes total sense. And I think you sound like a person that is very much in favor of the technology and completely appreciates and understands the value it could provide to society. And I'm not sure there's an aspect of our civilization where there's not an application, if you think about it, because what you're essentially doing is emulating human intelligence.
Well, and that's where the opportunities lie, if we can figure out how to use this tool to improve the outcome of the work that we're doing.
Yeah.
And we're pretty excited. I know you're probably running out of time. Let me tell you real quickly, we're working with state agencies where we think that as we're not talking about getting rid of people, but as people roll off in retirement, if we can make up the difference in their workload with AI, there's millions of dollars worth of savings at each agency in the state of South Carolina over the years. And we have 70 agencies. So we're thinking there's $100-200 million worth of savings every year going off into the future.
I think you're right.
That's pretty exciting.
I don't know if you're familiar, Representative Bradley, with the company Shopify. It's an online selling platforms, Canadian-based company. The CEO of that company, Tobias Lutke is his name. He's one of my favorite CEOs. He just issued a policy couple of months ago, maybe even not that long ago, that said, hey, any new request for employees, you must prove that AI can't perform that job before you can hire them. That's something maybe we ought to think about in government.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good plan. That's a good plan. So that's kind of what we're looking at in South Carolina.
Well, that makes sense.
Again,
go ahead.
You don't have to people in the process. It's
sure.
Just not replacing them when they leave. And on top of that, Gerard, what you have is if you can take some of that monotonous burden off your state employees and they are able to do work that is valued as a
That's
human,
right.
they like better. There's less turnover, and you got a better customer service delivery as well.
No doubt about it. Any task that's repetitive and doesn't require human skill. I mean, there's some things that AI just simply can't do. Requires the abilities of humans to discern. That's perfectly fine. But if it's a repetitive task that doesn't require that, you know it's a candidate for being done by AI, and we should think about do that. And that frees up that person to do more meaningful, productive, valuable work. I mean, it makes total sense to me. We got to apply that same standard in government. You know, businesses are doing this right now. They're applying that approach right now. And it makes sense in government.
And we have a handful of initiatives that we don't have time to get into right now that are trying to do the exact same thing. So I'm really anxious to see how that works.
Well, that certainly applauds you for that. Do you see this? You made a great point. The red states are trying to figure out a way to utilize this technology and implement common sense regulatory framework that protects people but doesn't preclude innovation. That's a great point, and again, I applaud you for it. Representative Jeff Bradley from the South Carolina House of Representatives has been our guest. Appreciate it, Representative Bradley. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you.
Yes,
talk
sir.
Soon.
Yes, sir. Folks, we're stepping aside for a break. We got half an hour of middays remaining. Stay with us.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
This is a story about Billy Joe and Bobby Sue. Two young lovers with nothing better to do than sit around the house.
We're back with you in the Element Well studio. We're just getting kicked off this week. We got a couple of remotes coming up too, right, Rhino? I think Golden Triangle Thursday, and then Itawamba Community College on Friday. So going up to the northeastern part of the state on the C Spire text line. Somebody sent us a note about a missing person. Silver alert, Pontotoc County. Jeff Jaggers, 67. Last seen May 10th, 11 a.m., 3000 block of Jaggers Road. Wearing a black shirt, green pants, rubber boots. Also wearing a black coat. All right, man. Hope that everything's okay. And he is found, identified and found. So let's see. Yeah, but talking about the nuclear bomb, all you have to do is get under a table or a school desk and you would survive a nuclear blast. That's pretty much what you did when we would do the little drills. No doubt about that. Let's see. What else we got here on the C Spire text line? Crosby and Simmons in Inverness. You know, Mr. G, out of all the talk coming out of Washington, I haven't heard a peep about a balanced budget. For all those in power, don't you think they would at least consider it might get a vote or two for the incumbents? No, I don't think you're going to see that. In fact, quite the opposite. The president has requested a $5 trillion increase in the debt ceiling that would cover 2 years. So that means the expectation is we're going to produce $2 trillion deficits annually for the next 2 years. I think it's going to be more than that, just based on a quick review of the Treasury, latest Treasury reports. But right now, there is some work being done on the One Big Beautiful Bill. And some details have emerged. Sunday, House Republicans unveiled some of the specifics in their plans, and that includes cuts to Medicaid. Now, the cuts to Medicaid really aren't cutting the amount Medicaid reimburses or the amount the government would pay for Medicaid. That was thought to the states, its share. It was thought for a while that maybe they're going to adjust that percentage, perhaps convert the program to a block grant, maybe reduce the percentage the federal government picks up of the expansion coverage group. None of that actually happened. They are, however, proposing in this draft work requirements that would require at least 80 hours a month of work, education, or volunteering. And there would be more stringent eligibility verification requirements. You'd have to check in twice a year rather than once a year. I mean, this makes sense. This is what's upside down in my view, Rhino, is that the expansion coverage group, which is able-bodied adults, meaning they're capable of working, able-bodied adults, that's what the so-called Affordable Care Act provided for in what's known as Medicaid expansion. Well, the federal government reimburses those costs at 90%. That was the incentive to the states. Hey, look, that's all part of the universal coverage mantra from the Obama era. The idea was everybody in the country is going to have insurance. And one of the ways to achieve that was providing, if you look at all the various elements of that plan, subsidies in the ACA exchanges for those that have income within a certain range, expanding Medicaid to include those with an income below 138% of the federal poverty level, even if they're able-bodied adults, create that new group. That was in there. They're actually subsidies for small businesses to implement health insurance in their programs. And then the other big one that I know grinded your gears was the mandate you got to buy insurance. Even young, healthy people that tend to not buy insurance because it's expensive and they're at a point in their lives where they're not making as much money as they are when they get older and need health insurance more. That was the idea.
What's the more immediate need? Food or health insurance?
Right.
Food.
Right. So that was the theory.
Do
as
I
you
pay
recall.
Rent or do I buy health insurance?
But that got blown up when the Supreme Court said, no, you can't mandate people buy insurance. So the bottom line is we have this sort of perverse incentive. Yeah, go cover the people who can work. They're able-bodied adults. You could say, okay, they need a safety net, but their safety net's needed because of their income, not because they're blind, they're disabled, they're retired and have low income as an elderly person, or their children in a low-income household, or they're pregnant and they can't work to a great extent. So it's crazy that the federal government reimburses at a higher rate for the population that needs it the least within the Medicaid coverage groups. That's the point that I think is just missing in all this, is kind of a perverse incentive. Now, I'm fine with the work requirements, but I have concerns about how you'll verify that and enforce that, especially if it's 80 hours of work a week. Pardon me. 80 hours of work a month. 80 hours a month. And then this education or volunteering, I'm not confident that we have what we need to verify all that, and I don't want to hire an army of people to go research and review all that. But it's a start for sure. I think it's a movement in the right direction. It's estimated that 8.6 million would lose their Medicaid coverage if that requirement was implemented. Now, there are 72 million in the Medicaid program, of which about 40% are children. It really is astonishing. Something else I got curious about, that I think underlies almost all of our problems in society, and that's the number of children born to Medicaid. That's where it all starts. That's where the cycle of poverty starts. That means you got someone who qualifies for Medicaid to pay for the birth, meaning their income's low, and now they're bringing a child into the world in a very low-income household. It's not an absolute that the child would struggle to become a productive, successful adult, but the prospects are much less in those circumstances. That's just proven. So, nationwide, this shocked me. 41% of the births paid for by Medicaid. In Mississippi, 57%. Almost 60% of the children born in this state are born in a low-income Medicaid-eligible household. The folks that don't need it, they don't have kids. That's part of the problem. And I don't want the government telling people you can't have kids. I'm not for that. But we got to educate more. Like, you know, kids cost money. But as long as we make it easy for them to get the bare minimum amount of money to exist, to live, I just think this continues to spiral out of control. This is a big old problem. The other thing that they're talking about is freezing this provider tax. So we've shared that before on the program. The way the industry, the healthcare industry, kind of games the Medicaid system is that rather than the state picking up the full amount the state is responsible for combined with the federal amount allocated to states to cover Medicaid, they'll just impose taxes on the industry, on healthcare providers who are willing to pay those taxes to get people enrolled in Medicaid so they don't have to eat the cost of care for those who don't have any insurance. And so Republicans are talking about freezing that program. Now, if California is the worst offender, it happens here in Mississippi too. The reason California is the worst, I categorize them as the worst, because as you know, their Medicaid program, it covers illegals. They're enrolling illegals. So they're taxing providers to get more, pull down more money from the federal government to fund a program that not only includes those who truly need a safety net, as we just discussed, but the illegals that have flowed across their border willingly, on their part, flowed across their border. So this is good news. I welcome this. We're coming right back with a final segment today in the Element Well studio.
Poly up a Mississippi.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes of this one big, beautiful bill, because that is really taking the center stage, certainly in the House of Representatives. And just looking at a quick rundown of what's in the draft at this point, making the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the so-called Trump tax cuts, permanent is included. Business tax credits, allowing companies to claim asset depreciation, write-off research and development expenses. This was something that was included in the original bill, and it was phased out as part of the original bill phased out over a period of time, I should say. And that's where we are right now, where I think it like half can be claimed. So this would restore full 100% expensing capital investment. No tax on tips is in the bill, but nothing with respect to overtime and Social Security at this point. Medicaid cuts, as we talked about, mainly work requirements. It's $10 billion a year. That's not nothing, but in a $7 trillion budget, it doesn't really make that much difference, but it's good policy. And then there are some cuts in SNAP, in food stamps, not as steep as some of the hardliners in the GOP wanted. But that looks like what's going on there. But there's still those New York representatives that are saying we're not supporting it without some changes in the SALT deduction, the state and local tax deduction, currently capped at $10,000. They want to see that go up, if not totally eliminated, including Elise Stefanik, someone I deeply respect. I think she's a great representative. Would have been a good vice president. She was in consideration. You remember she was appointed as the UN ambassador. The president decided, you know, we really need you to stay in the House. We need your vote because of the narrow margin the GOP has. So she essentially decided to, at the president's request, stay where she is and not accept that nomination. However, rumor is she's going to be running for governor against Kathy Hochul in the great state of New York. But she's one of the ones that says, yeah, I can't support this unless there's an increase in the state and local tax deduction cap, at least double, from $10,000 to $20,000, preferably completely eliminated. Well, when you start doing the scoring, of course, that costs money, and that causes a problem in getting the thing inside the parameters necessary to pass the bill in the Senate with a simple majority. So that is a problem. No, Thomas, making them permanent. That's what he's asked. Is it extension or making it permanent? No, that's the idea. Right now, as drafted, is to make permanent. Doing so is going to require more significant cuts or some adjustments elsewhere in taxes, which I hope is not the case. It looks like right now, at least, we're not going to see a new tax bracket on income, higher income earners. We saw the possibility of that floated by the president at a new tax bracket for all income over $1 million. Then he kind of changed that to $2.5 billion. So now it looks like the House is not going to do that. Now, something I heard the president say this morning that really needs to have some math checks on is, hey, don't forget, Congress, when you're putting this bill together and you're doing mainly the House. He said he called the Speaker. Don't forget that, hey, we're reducing the price of prescription drugs, which should, in his view, cut the cost of the Medicaid and Medicare program. Plus, we're going to have billions and billions of dollars of new tariff revenue coming in. I'd be careful with that. First thing is, Medicare, which is a huge program. It's a $900 billion a year. It's what Medicare costs. 21% of Medicare's total cost is pharmaceuticals. It's a little lower than I thought. The president said 50% this morning, but I did some research, looked at the trust fund report. It's about 21%. So that's significant, but I don't know that you could count on too much in the way of savings there. It just depends on how the pharmaceutical companies react. You could make some estimates that are off, and that could cause a budgetary problem is the only point I'm making. So they need more info on that. And then tariff revenue is really not that significant. And I think when you look at this deal cut between the U.S. and China, I'm not sure how that changes things, honestly, with respect to tariffs and possible revenue. We'll see. Not really sure. And then somebody, asked earlier, how come they don't talk about balancing the budget? It's real simple. It's because there's just no desire, no interest, no inclination to touch the true drivers of our spending, and that's these mandatory programs. Well, we're out of here today. We're going to be back with you again tomorrow. It's Super Talk Outdoors with Ricky Matthews after Fox News and Super Talk News. Stay safe and God bless everyone.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.